Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent ones, are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Now, thanks. Now let's get started. You know, this time we're going to talk about instigating change. And, you know, we announced the topic a little bit ahead of time, and thank you all for looking at it and thinking about it. And quite a few people said we were really inspiring change and not instigating it. They wanted us to use the word inspiring. And this is true. We are inspiring change. But I don't know. It seems that instigating is more definite, more practical, more we're going to make the change happen, because inspiring change is good, but we want to have it happen now. We want to be able to go forward with our goal, with our project, with our mediation. We want to reach a negotiated settlement, whatever it is that is our mission, our goal. So yeah, so look at it either way, but certainly inspiring change is also a very worthy idea. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about change and what we can do to make it be, as they say, to make the change happen. Mm-hmm. So let's start out with kind of a basic question. Let's talk about ourselves, because we are usually the leader, and we are, if we are not the leader, we're a participant, but usually we're the leader, and we might be a third party impartial even, which, well, does that make us a participant? People are saying, yeah, it really does make us a participant, but it doesn't, but it makes us the person who's going to get the sides together. Change, would we like to instigate? What type of change would we like to inspire? So let's start with ourselves, and then we'll get to the other participants, and then I think to the group itself. But what kind of change would we like to inspire in ourselves? Would we like to instigate in ourselves? Would we like to see happen? And thank you. I see we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being here. Let's see. You know, Grace and quite a few others are saying that she would like to inspire and instigate more confidence in herself when in a leadership role. More confidence. Feel more in charge, more secure in what to do. Mm-hmm. And, of course, confidence, to a certain extent, comes from experience, from keeping on doing it, right? But also from, perhaps people are saying, from training, yes. Mm-hmm. And yes, I do think, thank you for all of your participation. I do think indeed, as Helen and others are saying, that confidence comes not only from experience yourself being the leader, but also rather like an internship from watching a leader who has experience and a great deal of confidence handle situations. Kind of being an apprentice there and to watch it and see how it's done and then perhaps even debrief, discuss it afterwards, that that's what we did and why we did it. Mm-hmm. So it's good to, we want to have a change and we want to be more confident in our leadership. Yeah, we could all use that, even if we are very, very experienced. Yeah, and that's why we always look at everything that's given to us ahead of time. Any kind of, I actually, if I'm doing a mediation, for example, and it's fairly complicated or very multi-party, I ask the parties to submit to me ahead of time a written statement of their position. Mm-hmm. So that I can look at it and see what everybody's coming in with before we actually sit down at the table. And also, quite frankly, I think, yeah, I'm getting some agreement, and people are saying, why? Well, for the reason I stated, because I want to be prepared. I want to be able to see what people's position is ahead of time. But also, you know, there's a secondary reason, and it's because in my experience, I have a substantial amount of experience, in my experience, if people have to write down their position, it makes them think about it more. And it makes them kind of crystallize their thoughts and really, really get firm in what they're saying. Because, you know, you can say anything on the spur of the moment, but writing it down and really thinking about it and having to write it down in a way that someone else will understand and be persuaded, that takes some organization and some real thought. And I'm really fond of both sides, or all the sides. Sometimes there's more than two, of course. I'm really fond of all the sides sitting down and thinking and getting organized. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what else would we like to have changed about ourselves that we can really work on? Mm-hmm. Mayako and others are saying that they'd like more patience with the process. Sometimes it does seem like it's taken a long time, doesn't it? To have more patience with the process, because we understand, because we have experience and confidence in our leadership ability, we understand that the process takes a little while. It just does. There's steps that have to be acquired that you have to do, and there are days that you need to have some research, and you might have to inquire with some experts, and you might get the group together several times. You know, the process takes a while, and sometimes it seems like, gee, we're not getting anywhere. So patience with the process, and also if the leader has patience with the process and is able to convey that, it will greatly help with the group dynamic. Mm-hmm. Because everything will go, well, you know, she's seen it before, and we're getting there. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know quite a few of you like the visual timeline. And you know what? I don't think it's a good way to see where we've started and how far we've come. Because sometimes you forget. You know, everyone forgets how far down they started with how little had been accomplished and you know, just how far away we were. And when you get in the middle of it, it seems like, gee, we're not moving very fast. And, yeah, quite a few people are recommending one of those visual timelines. For example, when we do fundraising, you know how you can have the picture, I guess it's like a thermometer, of the tube, and then you color it in as you reach certain points. And you're sure you started with zero, and now you're at 2,000, and now, and you work it up until you get to the top, which is your goal for the amount of money, for example. That's a visual timeline. It shows us where we started, which was zero, and how far we've come, which is, look, now we've got $1,000. That's pretty good. Let's keep working. Let's keep going forward. You see, yeah, and it does. And it helps with everybody's patience with the process. Because a lot of times it seems like it's taking forever. Mm-hmm. You know, Hayden and a lot of other people are saying not only patience with the process, but for ourselves as the leader, we'd like to have extra patience with the participants too. Mm-hmm. Not only patience with the process, but extra patience with the people, with the participants. And you know, that is true too. As the leader, we kind of keep order in the group. And sometimes, yeah, we're human too. Sometimes our patience with the people and their repetitive bad habits kind of gets to us. And it's like, gee, I told you that 900 times. Stop that. No. We need more patience with the participants. I guess because they are part of the process, huh? A lot of people saying they're part of the process, Hayden and others, that, yeah, well, that's true. They're an unavoidable part of the process. How are we going to have a process if there's no one working on it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have to work on having patience with the process, but also on having patience with the group participants. After all, they're not all on the same level, and they have to work things through themselves. Yeah, so you have to have patience. And sometimes, you know, it wears a little thin, but we should, but we may not, under the civility rules, we cannot show that, right? Right. Barbara and others are saying that you also need, you'd like to change within ourselves, that you need more self-control to remain impartial. Especially if we are a mediator, we're a third-party impartial who has been called in to settle a dispute, help settle a dispute between the parties. You have to have the self-control to remain impartial. This is true. Because you don't want to take a side. Even if, as you're sitting there, and as you're looking everything over, and as you're listening to the arguments and the research, you're a human being, there's a good chance you form an opinion as to which side really is right or has the better argument. But you need to remain impartial because the group, the participants, have to work that out for themselves. Yeah. So we need to remain impartial. Steve and others are saying that it's important to inspire change, to instigate change within ourselves, to have more empathy with the others. Even though we are the leader, and even though we are impartial, that doesn't mean that we can't have empathy all around and understand where the various opinions, the various sides are coming from. Empathy does not require you to accept the argument. It does not require you to agree. Empathy just requires you to understand. Understand how someone could reach that conclusion. You know, here's quite a few. Thank you for all of your participation. I'm going to call these greater ability to be persuasive. Because the leader wants to help the group get towards the goal, right? That's the idea of the thing. And so the leader needs to be fairly persuasive. This is true. And so Najina and others are talking about instigating change and having a speaking improvement, being able to speak more clearly or more persuasively. People are talking about persuasiveness. And to have an improvement in your persuasiveness and your speaking style. That's a good point. And people also say negotiation skills improvement. To be able to get the parties together. You know, there's a certain amount of tact involved. Because you want to show the parties that both sides want to negotiate a settlement. And that goes to persuasion. And that goes to negotiation skills. And you're all absolutely correct, because just about everybody is getting all excited and talking about listening skills. Yes, we've talked about that in prior shows, haven't we? And by the way, if you want to hear prior ones, last five archived on our website, Recipe for Peace Now, all of the shows, including the last five, archived on the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/Recipe for Peace Now. And we've talked about listening quite a bit, haven't we? And that in order to understand what it is that needs to be done, you need to listen to everyone so that you can find common ground and reach a negotiated settlement. Yeah, listening skills improvement. Very important to be able to listen and to maybe even listen with empathy. And to think about what's being said so that you understand where the common points are and can emphasize them. Yeah. And that goes to our persuasion during negotiation. Now, we've talked about what kind of changes we'd like to make in us, essentially speaking. So let's think about what changes we would like to instigate, inspire, in the participants. Yeah, we've talked about us. Let's talk about them, so to speak. let's talk about the participants and what kind of change is often necessary in order to reach a negotiated agreement, in order to reach our goal. Mm-hmm. And so what change would you like to instigate in the participants? You know, Jessica and others are pointing it right out, and this is true, the civility rules. And we talk about this quite a bit. In fact, I think we might even talk about it every session because they're so important. We want to have the civility rules enforced. And we are the leader, therefore we enforce them. No being rude to anyone. We take turns when we speak. We listen to everyone's opinion without rolling our eyes or doing something like that. Mm-hmm. We are courteous to the other participants. After all, we're all giving our most precious commodity. We're giving our time to try to make the world a better place. What could be more noble? Mm-hmm. So the civility rules about rudeness and about holding side conversations and like that, civility rules. We want to change the fact that sometimes the civility rules are not obeyed, right? Usually I enforce the civility rules early and often and fairly. They have to apply to everybody, including me. As the leader, I have to be civil to everyone because the civility rules require that I be a good example as the leader. If I'm not being civil, how can I ask someone else to be civil? No, I must be a good example. Mm-hmm. So the civility rules, what we like to change to inspire in our participants. Obedience to civility rules is our first one. Mm-hmm. Lawrence and other people are saying being open to changing and modifying our opinions. We'd like the participants to be able to do that. Be open to changing and modifying opinions. Mm-hmm. The key here is modifying, I think, because people won't change their opinion completely, but they can be persuaded that they're still keeping their core principle. But it needs to be modified so that we can get together as a group. Everybody has to modify their opinion so that we can work together and we can succeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So being open to changing or modifying opinions, that's a good thing to change about the people in the group, the individuals. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else would we like to change or inspire, instigate the change for the participants in the group? Mm-hmm. Zia says that you want them to have patience with the process on their side, understanding that it takes time and effort. Mm-hmm. Patience with the process on their side, with the understanding that it takes time and effort. You know, sometimes people, because you have a good reputation, they expect you to snap your fingers and make it all better. Well, we are leaders, we are negotiators, we are mediators, we are not magicians or genies out of a bottle or something. You can't just snap your fingers. You have to have some patience with the process, with the understanding that we are going forward. Yeah, that we are making it. It just takes a little while, it takes time and effort. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else would we like the individuals in the group to have? Michael says empathy for other participants' opinions, even if you don't agree. Yeah, we'd like to have empathy, and we'd like the group to have empathy for other participants' opinions, even if you don't agree. And that's the key to it, isn't it? Because if somebody's really exactly the same opinion as you are, well, then there's no there's no discussion, really. But sometimes there's diverse opinions. And even if you don't agree with it, we would like our participants and ourselves to have understanding of why the person has that opinion. Mm-hmm. And then we can delve into it and talk about it and negotiate it. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love this. Ellen says that we want our individuals in the group to take a moment to think before speaking. Oh, lovely. I'd like the participants to take a moment to think before speaking. Oh, yes. Especially if the speaking, what you're going to say, might be construed uncivilly. Mm-hmm. Time to just be quiet and to not you need to think before you speak. Take a moment to think before speaking. What a lovely way of putting it. Yes. And very diplomatic, too. Mm-hmm. Thinking before speaking. Mm-hmm. Rick says that that's absolutely true. And you also need to take a moment to listen before speaking. Mm-hmm. That goes with thinking, doesn't it? You're listening, and you're looking at all sides, and you're thinking about it. And then you speak. Mm-hmm. A moment to listen before speaking. And a moment to think before speaking. Yes. So, we've talked about ourselves and what we would like to change for the better. And we've talked about individuals in the group and what can be done to improve the group dynamic and allow us to get to our goal. So let's talk about now what kind of change we would like to instigate, what kind of change we'd like to inspire in the group as a whole. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, groups are funny. Sometimes they kind of do act as their own entity. Mm-hmm. And people will, yes, people are saying, thank you for all of your participation. People are saying that groups are creatures in and of themselves. Well, yeah, because there are a bunch of individual opinions conglomerated in order to make a group opinion. And it's a wonderful thing when that happens, and it really works. So what would we like to inspire, instigate in the group as a whole? I'd like them to be able to do. Mm-hmm. You know, this is very practical, because we're a practical program, aren't we? We don't just talk in abstracts. Kendrick says we would like the group we would like the group as a whole to have efficiency with their assignments. Efficiency with their assignments. Yeah, and we are actually getting quite a bit of agreement. Thank you for your participation. And quite a few people are saying to be not only efficient, which I suppose implies getting it in on time, very important because you don't want to hold up the group, but we also need to carefully research to be sure that we've done it right and that what we present to the group is a reasoned conclusion. It has been carefully researched, carefully thought about, and that we've looked at all sides. Mm-hmm. We've looked around and we've thought about it. And we haven't just stopped at the first internet article that agrees with us. Mm-hmm. So efficiency assignments. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Diksha says that the most important thing, the most things we need to inspire to as a group when we aspire to change, because as we come into a group, of course, we're a bunch of individuals. We form the group with our membership. Mm-hmm. Right. So Diksha says that the teams need to work together as a unit. Mm-hmm. What change would you like to aspire? That we need to have the teams work together as a unit. Generally speaking, although this is not practical all the time, but generally speaking, teams should be carefully chosen. Oftentimes, I choose them on expertise, mm-hmm, or people that will get along with each other and kind of push each other to the max so that we get the most concise and best research. Mm-hmm. So let me know what we're doing and what was done before. Excuse me. So that's, the teams need to work together as a unit. Mm-hmm. You know, Anne says that this is a good point, way of putting it, that a group and what we'd like to change, we want to have the teams work together as a unit, that a group is not a competition. So you need to control the jealousy and the idea that others have a better assignment. That happens sometimes. I try to get volunteers for my assignments. Because if somebody volunteers and says, I know how to do that, I'll make those phone calls, I've got a connection someplace, it's a beautiful thing. Because if people volunteer, they will undoubtedly do it. But if they don't, well, not so much maybe. Mm-hmm. So the teams need to work together, and it's not a competition, so you need to control jealousy and the idea that others have a better assignment. Ooh, so true. Yeah. That happens especially when people are chosen for a team and haven't volunteered and kind of made their own. Mm-hmm. It's not a that we want to change the idea that it's a competition, because it's not a competition, so you need to control the jealousy and the idea that others have a better assignment. You know, I know this is a kind of an Americanism, but you ever hear the, and this is a global show, but did you ever hear the expression, the grass is always greener on the other side? Because it always seems that the people have it better and they've got an easier assignment and they can do it faster and with less effort. Mm-hmm. Basically speaking, as you get into them, all assignments have some complexities. Yes, but you need to change the idea that it's a competition, because it's not a competition. So you need to control the jealousy and the idea that others have a better assignment. Good point. Mm-mm-mm. Gary says that the group dynamic should be the team dynamic. Yes, the group dynamic should be the team dynamic. This would be especially be true if there was no subcommittees, if the group was the team, and we need to act together as a coherent unit, mm-hmm, and we need to get together what it is that we want and how we're going to achieve it. Mm-hmm. The group dynamic should be the team dynamic. Yep. I can see the point, but when you have, well, yeah, but Gary says that what he really meant was, and thank you for your participation, that the sub-teams, the sub-committees, should take with them the group spirit of the whole. And that's a real good point, because they're really not in a vacuum, right? Everybody's talking to each other. Everybody's thinking about how we can better ourselves and get to the goal that we had in mind and effectuate the change, right? Yeah. In fact, we're about to talk about, this may be the point, I suppose. I was going to do it maybe a little later. I always say this program is organic. It depends on where we go and what we talk about. And you know, I really enjoy it. It's really wonderful, and I hope you always learn something, because I always learn something too. Because a lot of people are talking about the group dynamic of the inside of the group versus the outside influences that are pushing on the group, pushing the group to go a certain way, for example. And, you know, that's very true, because we talk about group dynamic as though it is just in this room, amongst these people, in this group, and that we are creating it. We are creating it to a certain extent, yes, but really the group dynamic is influenced by the outside too, right? About other people's opinions about what we're doing and how we should do it. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, I took a sip of water. About how other people impact and will be impacted by what our goal will be when we accomplish it. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people weighing in, right? Their opinions. There's other groups that we might be interacting with who are trying to effectuate the same change, mm-hmm, and reach the same goal. Yeah, all these things have an influence on our own group dynamic, because we don't just do it between ourselves. It's done in the real world, you know, with all kinds of people are talking about media traditional media and also social media, where we all talk about it and we all have an opinion. And some of the people in the group may be blogging. This is true, too. Or Facebooking, you know, doing something with social media, which is impacting their opinions that they're bringing to the group. Yeah. So the group dynamic is indeed within, but it's affected by what's happening outside, too. And that's the really cool part about it, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Laura says that one of the things, and this is that this is really the process, and that one of the things you want to inspire as the group, in the group as a whole, is confidence in this process, that we're getting there, that we are working towards the right goal. Mm-hmm. And that really is confidence in the process and confidence in the fact that we are going forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isabel is making a very good point, too, that we have to look at each other. You want to inspire change in the group as a whole to get them, because people don't think this way when they start, right? To get them to look to each other as equals on a mission to accomplish the goal. Look to each other as equals on a mission to accomplish the goal. And not everybody comes in with that idea that they, well, a lot of folks kind of think they're better, right? And they're not. We're all equal. We're all working towards it. Some of us might be giving some expertise, but it doesn't make us better. It just makes us more experienced. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Raynor says that the thing that he'd like to inspire the group as a whole to do, to instigate it as a whole to do, is to have a willingness to share expertise. A willingness to share expertise. If you know something, or you know how to do something, or you've seen it before, well, for heaven's sakes, tell us. Show us what to do. There's no you know the old expression, there's no sense reinventing the wheel. Mm-hmm. I know this is a global show, and that may be a kind of an Americanism, but it means there's no sense in having to start from the first step. If someone's already invented the way, shown us a path, there's no sense in reinventing the wheel every time. If you've got expertise, please tell us. Mm-hmm. We'd like to know. Mm-hmm. And we are indeed equals. It's just we have different abilities and different experiences that we share with the group. Yeah. Samata says it's a willingness to accept each other as individuals on the same team. What a good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Samara says that she would like to change, and that people have a willingness to accept each other as individuals on the same team. Accept each other as individuals on the same team. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a good idea. We've got our opinions, and we're individuals, but we're working together because we're also teammates. Mm-hmm. Aspen says that the group needs to put the group needs above the individual disputes. Yeah. So one of the things I'd like to see to be done is put the group needs above individual disputes. Yeah. So Deborah says the individuals working together is a primary goal of the group. Good point. You need to put the group needs above individual disputes. And then Deborah says that the group needs to understand that the individuals working together is a primary goal of the group. We've been successful. We're working together. In order to reach our goal, we need to do that. Therefore, it is one of our primary goals. Yeah, what a good idea. Yes. Thank you for all of your input. And so now we're talking about seeing each other as individuals who become a team, and that working together as individuals, understand that the individuals working together is a primary goal of the group. So how are we going to do that? And yes, we finally made it. You know, the last few shows, the show before last, we had a wonderful discussion. We talked so long that I didn't look up, and we ran out of time. We didn't do the recipes. And last time I had a terrible cold. In fact, you might notice that my voice still sounds kind of weird. At least it does to me. And I keep sipping water, which is what the little pauses are. But, and so I had to end early. And I wanted to thank all of you very much for all of your nice input as to what to do about my throat. It was very nice of all of you to be concerned and send me all kinds of remedies and things. And yes, I believe I tried every single one of them, and which is why I'm up right now. I didn't exactly go down, but there's kind of a respiratory flu or something going around here, and it's really something, I got to tell you. It's just the drippiest thing you ever saw. And I managed to catch it on a plane, which, of course, is recycled air, and it's kind of like, yeah, let's all incubate things. So thank you all very much for your concern. That was very nice of you. So we've reached the recipe for peace now idea about having food in the room when we're getting together, because we want to be individuals creating a team. And the way to do that is to get to know each other somewhat as individuals so that we can find common ground. And, you know, I always say the food is a tool. It's not because we're hungry, although it might be dinner time. I mean, we might be hungry. But it's really a tool to have a time out when things get a little, they look like they might breach the civility rules, for example. Or we just need a break. We've been working really hard in a long time, and we're getting kind of like we could stand up and have a little something to eat. Yeah, and it's a tool to get us together side of the formality of the negotiation. Gets us up on our feet and talking to each other. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And so we like to have a few things to eat in the room, right? Right. Gives us something to do. And to get to know each other during. You know, I hate to use the word networking. It's so overused. But it's really a way to get to know each other as individual and find something in common, right? Right. And it gives us an informal manner to do that. So, and now I'm going to say what I say every single show, because it's so important. If you're going to have food, you need to take a survey amongst the participants as to food allergies, food prohibitions, or religious prohibitions to some sort of food. You don't want anybody to not have a good time or get sick. Mm-hmm. Yes, and then you tell everybody, you tell everybody the results of the survey that somebody, for example, can't eat peanuts. You know, so you tell everyone. Also, I think it's primarily because I hate to have a party where you run out of food. I think that it's important for the host, which is usually us, to have some extra so that we don't run out. And I think that we should have at least one safe recipe. Now, what is a safe recipe? Oh, you're right. People are writing in. Thank you very much that I say the same thing and then I forgot something. Also, when you bring food, before we talk about what safe recipe is, when you bring food, you will need to ask people in advance to label the food. Not what's it called, meatloaf, but what is in it, a list of ingredients, so that everyone can run their eye down the list of ingredients and know if they can eat that particular thing. Yes, thank you for reminding me to say that. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, what's a safe recipe? Well, a safe recipe, we've taken our survey, right? And it looks like everyone can eat it. It doesn't have too many ingredients, and they are ingredients that will, in my area, coming to my workshop, seminar, negotiation, whatever it is, dispute resolution, that people in my area would have eaten before and be familiar with. So it's common to my area. And so that's a safe recipe, and I think we should have one of those. Our safe recipe this time is very, very simple. We have a little more complicated recipe, but this one's really simple, and it's really easy, and I've gotten some feedback that most of the recipes that we do, they could use some rewarming. or something, they need a little bit of a facility in order to make them be delicious. They need to be warmed. And a lot of times you don't have a facility, although you can indeed, of course, use an insular pack, depending how far you're traveling and how long. But this one doesn't need to be warmed. It's just I call it a cold vegetarian pasta salad, but it doesn't really have to be cold. It's just not hot. Does that make any sense? Yeah, room temperature. Although you keep it in the fridge before that. Mm-hmm. So this is a vegetarian pasta salad, and it's really quite yummy, and it's pretty also, and you can make it ahead of time. So let's have about 1.5 pounds of cooked pasta, not fettuccine. Pardon me, something that is individual pieces, like a rotini or macaroni or something like that, that's easily served. The reason I don't ever like long noodles is it's too messy. You got to have tongs, and then you got to take a whole bunch. And this way you can take as much as you like using a spoon. So about 1.5 pounds of some sort of pasta that looks pretty. You know, in my area, you buy pasta dried in boxes. And there's such a thing for the same price that's called vegetable rotini. It's three different colors. It's green for the spinach, red for the tomato, and then there's a regular just plain one in there. And I don't think they taste different. Honestly, I don't. You know, people go, oh, they have a different taste. You know, maybe it's because my taste buds are not as acute as some people's. But, boy, they all taste like pasta to me. But they're very pretty. So I like to use them in salads and stuff because they look very nice. It's just one of those things. It's the same price. It's the same effort. And quite frankly, I don't think it changes the taste at all. So that's what I would use. I would use what they call a tricolor. Yeah, people are saying it's actually artificially dyed. Oh, well. But anyway, it's three colors. Mm-hmm. I'll say, and if you don't want to use that, use regular. But you need to cook it al dente, of course, kind of not squishy, and drain it real nice, pat it dry. Let's have three scallions that we're going to finely chop because they're delicious and they look nice. About 3/4 cup of sun-dried tomatoes. I actually like the kind that come in this area. You know how you can get sun-dried tomatoes really dry in a bag? I actually kind of favor the ones that come in the oil, if you can find it. They come in a jar, and they have oil. They're packed in oil. And I like to use those because they're softer, and I think they're yummy. And if I had that and I took them out of the oil and to cut them into little pieces for the salad, like thin strips, and I had the jar and it still had excess oil, when we get to the dressing part, I would actually use that oil instead of just plain oil. So we just think about that. So sun-dried tomatoes, we cut them into thin strips, about 1/2 cup. That is about the amount is in one of those little jars. Let's have 1 pound of spinach. If you're going to use the kind that comes like on stalks, you need to trim it. And let's kind of shred it up. Just take you know how you fold it into bundles, and then you take a knife and you kind of run it through to shred it because it'll look nice with the pasta. You don't want the big leaves there. So just kind of run your knife through. And if it's got an actual stalk, because some of that stuff looks more like kale than it does spinach. In the States, you can buy spinach leaves. I would use 1 pound of spinach leaves. Easier, and it's not very expensive. And then I would just kind of make them into bundles and chop them, just run a knife through them. Yeah, kind of shred them, yeah. But if you've got spines, pull the leaves off the spines. Some of that stuff's more like kale than spinach. Let's have some pine nuts. Like 1/3 cup, just a little bit, because they're all yummy. Mm-hmm. You can't find pine nuts, then use some other kind of nut, but make sure that everybody can eat it, and make sure to list it, because I don't know that it's going to show so well. And let's confess, I like a little bit of chopped oregano in here. Mm-hmm. gives it a little bit of taste, like a half a tablespoon, just a little bit, like a little dried. You can even use dried. Mm-hmm. So that's it. That's our ingredients. We've got sun-dried tomatoes and spinach and pasta. Oh, delicious. Now here's the dressing part. It's just as easy as the salad part. We're going to have like a quarter of a cup of oil. You can use olive oil if you don't think it's too strong. I actually don't. I think it's delicious. You can use the oil that you just got out of the sun-dried tomato jar. You can half and half it if you like. Like a quarter of a cup, half olive oil and half the tomato oil if you think it's too strong. Let's have a garlic clove that we're going to mince up real small. And you know you need a little bit of salt, like a teaspoon. But if you've used the oil from the tomatoes, it's already quite salty. So we've got all those delicious ingredients. Stick them all together. The pasta, the vegetables, the nuts, the whole bit. Delicious already. Now we're going to take our salad ingredients, which is the quarter cup of oil, the garlic clove, and maybe a pinch of salt, depending. I'm going to whisk it around. And we're going to pour the dressing over the salad, and we are done. Isn't that a fun recipe? It's just fast. It has very few ingredients, and it's very easy to do. And it looks very pretty. Yeah, and it's easy to bring, too. Exactly. It's easy to transport. In fact, if I'm going to transport it for any distance or whatever, I use a little container and I take the dressing with me and I just remix it together wherever I am and then toss the whole thing. It keeps the spinach from going kind of soggy. Yeah, it keeps everything together. So that's our safe recipe. It doesn't have too many ingredients, and you've checked to make sure that people can eat tomatoes and nuts. Want to be double sure you can keep the nuts off. Yeah. And yes, of course, these are general recipes. Yes, of course, you can add chicken or whatever to it. People ask me especially about chicken. Very delicious with it. But of course, you would need to cook it very thoroughly before you add it in. Right? Right. And make little cubes so that it looks nice and it incorporates. Okay, that's our safe recipe. This is our adventure recipe. It's a very traditional beef bourguignon. And just like the other one was kind of simple and didn't have very many ingredients, this is our adventure recipe because, well, not really because it has so many ingredients, but because it's got liquor in it. Yeah. And it's got wine in it. And some people object to that. They can't. Mm-hmm. And it's got a whole bunch of other stuff, but it's really because of the liquor and the wine. So, here we go. It's a very delicious beef bourguignon. You can make it the night before and then store it rather carefully so you don't make anybody sick, and then bring it the next day. So I like it a lot because you can make it, don't have to make it on the spot, so to speak. Pardon me. And, of course, you're going to serve this over, not over, you're going to have next to it a big pot of rice or noodles or pasta. You know, it's something that goes underneath beef bourguignon. Yes, George always votes for mashed potatoes. That is absolutely true. But you keep that separate, of course, so that people can take as much of the plain starch as they like and then put as much beef bourguignon on it as they would like. Uh-huh. And yeah, I usually, in all truth and honesty, I usually make pasta because it travels well. I do indeed, the only thing I've got that is, and a lot of you have seen it, of course, the only thing I've got that is just kind of only does one thing is I actually have a rice cooker because I really do a lot of rice. And you can just put the rice cooker out there after it's finished cooking and just have people take from that. Yeah. So I like rice underneath it too, I must confess that. And yes, mashed potatoes are delicious. Mm-hmm. So let's have 3 pounds of stewing beef, the kind that comes cubed. It's like round steak or something. It in this area, they call it stew meat. Pardon me. My goodness, I still do have that cold, don't I? My apologies. Let me just take a little sip of water. They call it stew meat. Thank you. actually always suspected that it was kind of like the odds and ends when they're doing the carving, the cutting at the butcher shop. So let's have 3 pounds of that. We're going to cube it up and take off. If it's got a lot of fat, kind of make it a little leaner. Let's have 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil, a large sweet onion that we're going to cut into cubes also. I really do like the Vidalias and stuff. I like the sweet ones. They cook up the best. They don't make your eyes tear all over the place, and they're just lovely. So we've gotten that nice Vidalia, nice yellow one, nice sweet one. And then let's have a nice red pepper that we're going to seed and cut in vein and cut into cubes. Let's have 6 carrots, peel and sliced, kind of thick, kind of make chunks. Mm-hmm. 3 garlic cloves we're going to mince. Let's put a little bit of rosemary in there, like a teaspoonful. Mm-hmm. Here comes the wine. I actually like brandy in beef bourguignon. Always gives it that little extra touch. It's just delicious. So let's have about 1/4 cup of brandy. You can use cognac or something that's nice and tasty like that. And then we're going to have a bottle of red wine, a big bottle, 750 mil. Yeah, at least in the United States, that's a regular bottle of wine. A bottle of red wine. Use something that is, well, there's no such thing as cooking wine, really, right. But use something that's nice and fruity and delicious. And you don't have to be an expensive wine. I mean, you can get a really nice cheap wine, but don't use something that you wouldn't drink in your cooking, because why put something in your cooking that's going to ruin it? So a nice bottle of wine, 2 cups of beef broth, you're going to need it, 1 tablespoon of tomato paste. Let's have, did we already do oil? Yeah, we'll have enough oil. If we don't, we could put a little bit more. About 1 pound of mushrooms. You know how you're supposed to, if they're whole and they are come from the market or something, you're supposed to wipe them clean and take the stems out and then wipe the stems too. In the States, mushrooms come kind of prepped. You can get sliced mushrooms. In all truth and honesty, friends, that, of course, is what I'm going to use. So I'm going to use 1 pound bag of sliced mushrooms. You can't get such a thing and you've got to mess with wiping them. You take a paper towel or something and you just wipe off the dirt, right? And then you pull off the little stems and you wipe them too, because quite frankly, I would use the stems. There's nothing wrong with them and they look perfectly fine. You just have to slice them. So you slice the whole thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And 3 tablespoons of butter and 3 tablespoons of flour. Now, the first step you really do need to do, you need to brown the beef. Because if you don't brown the darn things, it will not be as delicious, and the meat will go tough on you. Yeah. So we're going to take the same pot we're going to make the beef bourguignon in, like a Dutch oven. We're going to heat the oil, and we're going to take the meat, and we're going to wipe off the cubes, kind of pat them dry a little bit if they're wet. And give them a little bit of salt and pepper. Never hurt anything on all sides. We're going to put them into the vegetable oil, and we're going to turn them around on all sides until they're browned. Right? Right. It takes a few minutes, but it's really worth it. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to take the beef out because I need room. If you've got enough room, you can shove it to the side. But I'm going to take the beef out, put it on a plate, and when I get all done, I'm going to put the beef back in and put the juices that came out to the plate too. So we've got oil and beef yumminess in the pot already. We're now going to add the onion and the red pepper and the carrots, and we're going to stir fry them, so to speak, until they're kind of a little bit browned and kind of delicious and the onions are getting translucent. It's about 5 minutes. We're going to add the garlic and the rosemary. And stir it around. Not too long. Takes another minute or so. Now, here's the time to add the brandy. We're going to add it now. I'm going to roast up the heat a little bit, put the brandy in, and cook it for a minute or two. We are not trying to make it flame. For God's sakes, do not make a mess out of yourself or hurt yourself. But you want to kind of glaze the whole thing with the brandy because we're adding it for taste is what it really is. Delicious. Then we're going to add the red wine, the beef broth, and the tomato paste. We're going to stir it all around. And we're going to throw the beef back in. Because the beef's not cooked. We just browned it on all sides to seal in the juice. Mm-hmm. We've got it all in there, all the liquid, all the meat, all the vegetables, the whole bit. We're now going to lower the heat, cover it, and simmer it until the beef is really cooked through and soft and delicious, and just like you think it is, all fork tender. It takes, what, about 2 hours. It takes a little while. You got to leave some time for this one. That's what's kind of good that you can make it the day before. So 2 hours. It's now been cooked. While this is doing it, we're going to brown the mushrooms a little bit at the very end. Mm-hmm. In a little bit of oil in a different pot. And because we don't want to add them in raw because they'll be flabby if they just boil. So we want to take the mushrooms and brown them in a little bit of oil. Let's use the butter. Remember the butter that we had? Yeah. So let's put the butter in, brown them up, and now at the very last minute, we're going to add the mushrooms. You don't add them beforehand because they'll be too soft. Please don't use canned mushrooms. It's the only thing that I don't actually use out of a can under any circumstances. They're just not good. They're not mushroom consistency. They're kind of weird. And they come in that water. If you must, because you're just in a hurry and you can't find fresh mushrooms, be sure and drain them really hard and put them really in at the last minute because they don't need any cooking. They're pre-cooked. Okay, now, remember our butter and our flour? We're going to stir them together into kind of a paste. And then we're going to add it to the beef broth, the beef mixture. And we're going to stir it around because it's going to thicken the sauce. Make the whole thing a little bit thicker so that when it goes on the pasta or the rice or the mashed potatoes, it's got a nice consistency to it. Just delicious. And so that's it. We've simmered it. We've put it together. Not hard to do. You do indeed need to brown the meat on both sides. Don't forget that part. And very delicious and good to make the day before. And then just bring it and reheat it. It really will take to reheating quite well. Do not freeze it, of course. Just refrigerate it. So, and it's delicious, but it is our adventure recipe because it has wine in it and brandy. Yes, some of you add ham hocks. Okay, you know these are basic recipes. Add whatever you'd like. Some people are saying that they add bacon and ham hocks and stuff to their beef bourguignon. Probably delicious. I just never do. But, you know, add as you like. But remember that that makes it an adventure recipe because a lot of people don't eat pork. And I see that our time together is nearly up. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And if you'd like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Last 5 shows archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows archived on the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you very much for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here, and please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.